Hundreds of millions saw Holocaust, which was rebroadcast the following year. By that time, the Holocaust and the media seemed a worthy field of study.
Back around 1979, I realized no book had ever been written on the subject, and I saw more and more films dealing with the Holocaust.
Annette Insdorf has just updated her book, Indelible Shadows, Film and the Holocaust. To the 180 documentary and dramatic films already in the earlier editions, she's just added 170 more, most made since 1989. And that doesn't even include the very recent crop of related films, such as The Pianist, Max, The Gray Zone, The Last Letter, Blindspot.
I'm convinced that the reception of Holocaust films has changed a great deal since I wrote the first version of the book in 1979. At that time, the images were a wee bit fresh. In other words, if you saw a sealed boxcar or smoke emerging from a chimney or barbed wire, you did not necessarily go, oh, Auschwitz or the Jews. It wasn't inherent in that. Now, after 22, 3 years, it is.
In some cases, filmmakers, some with family connections to the tragedy, reacted to an outpouring of fictionalized portrayals with an outpouring of personal documentaries, using testimony and authentic images to tell stories of the period.
You know, I think back then, the cycle of films that I was part of was in some way like the Jewish reaction to Roots, because Roots came out and everybody started looking in their own backyard.
We made our own bunker.
Steve Brand's film Kaddish was made in the mid-80s. It tells the story of a young Jewish man whose father survived by hiding in a hole in the ground for 6 months.
And we buried ourselves there May the 2nd in 1944.
And the resulting obsessive behavior of the son.
He was in his room and he comes out with 3 pages of writing about the swastika and about Germany. I said, where did you get this from?
The term Holocaust film was not yet in such casual use.
Back when we were doing Kaddish, Ellie was always going around talking about the Holocaust. Survivors were gathering for annual demonstrations. It wasn't a big thing. Certainly Children of Survivors was just becoming. There was this group called Second Generation. This was all pretty new.
Many others took up the subject. Annette Insdorf points to waves of films. There was an early group from the late 50s to the 70s which focused on the Nazi criminals and the Jewish victims.
The second wave, mainly for me in the late 80s, but certainly through the 90s, that has focused on resistance and rescue. How and with whose assistance were the few saved?
There was always the hope that I could put the past behind me and never have to deal with it. I thought, just keep doing your cultural and interesting projects.
Aviva Slesson has had a career of making films about everything else. The Algonquin Roundtable, the director William Wyler, the National Gallery. Her current film, however, is Secret Lives, a documentary based on her experiences as a hidden child during the Holocaust.
My mother was on a certain day packing children's clothes.
Slesson's film is the story of Jewish children sent away by their parents to live in non-Jewish families, to pass and therefore survive the war years.
And I asked her, am I going alone? And she said, yes, tomorrow you are going alone, but we'll come the next day.
Secret Lives examines the impact of such arrangements on children who suddenly had new sisters or brothers.
Moana didn't look like us. My sister and I were these typical Dutch girls, you know. I mean, the Germans loved us. And Moana was this little dark thing.
And its effect on the grown-ups who were their protectors. In fact, the personal stories are the heart of the film. Slesson doesn't even think of Secret Lives as a so-called Holocaust film.
I don't think people are as interested in the Second World War. I think they're Holocausted out in some way. I think they're rendered numb by more and more stuff about the Holocaust. I think people just roll their eyes. And I find myself doing that too until the second sentence, if I hear what the real story is, what did happen in Shanghai? What did happen? Oh, there was an American diplomat who brought out Jews. Oh, who was that? Varian Fry. Then I'm interested again.
Filmmaker Liz Garbus has looked to relationships too to sort out the subject. Her film, soon to be broadcast on the A&E network, tells the true story of a woman who tore off her Jewish star and hid her identity to survive. Eventually, she even went so far as to marry a Nazi officer, hence the title, The Nazi Officer's Wife.
And I had to pretend to be 8 years younger. I had always to be very, very careful when I talked about it, not to give me away.
You're this Jewish person pretending to be Christian, and everybody all around you, the Jews are being shipped off and killed. And to be sleep at night and have sex with a Nazi party member is a pretty deep connection to somebody who's really the enemy. Those were the most interesting questions to me.
So, as the number of films increases, the emphasis changes. First, the Holocaust is unmentionable, unknown even, barely treated on film. Then, so big in scope, one can't even comprehend the generalities. Then the stories are personal, complex, bringing the tragedy down to earth, so to speak, with human dilemmas we can understand. And the audience is there.
So the pendulum has swung, let's say. Instead of ignoring the Holocaust in terms of dramatic storytelling or documentaries, we've now moved in the other direction.
What is interesting is the back and forth of fiction and nonfiction. Holocaust in 1978 told a fictional story which reached a mass audience and inspired even more documentaries to tell true stories, which may be responsible for the fact that the recent dramatic Holocaust films have not been fictional at all. The memoir and the feature film have merged in Schindler's List and The Pianist. Maybe by now we all know too much to accept anything less. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko.